Hi, I'm Karen Spies with Second Wind Women, and I'm here today with Gwen Bortzner. She's a business advisor who provides outside perspective and unwavering accountability. She's also the one to ask the hard question that others won't. After 4 decades of working across 47 plus industries, Gwen has learned that marketing and sales have built-in feedback loops, so you know quickly if they're working. But the behind-the-scenes engine that runs your business, that's where the blind spots live. Okay, I want to talk about blind spots. That's where successful businesses secretly start breaking down, even when everything looks fine from the outside. Gwen works with women who appear successful, but are privately wondering how long they can maintain their current pace before something breaks. Oh my God, so relatable. Her clients are doing all the right things, yet they find themselves overwhelmed and secretly questioning if this is what success is supposed to feel like. Through her personalized approach, Gwen helps entrepreneurs identify bottlenecks others miss and build businesses that perform well without consuming their lives. Yes, I want to hear about 47 different industries. What's that?
So my life started as a programmer, as a freelance programmer, back when PCs were brand new.
And do we want to say a year?
Oh, yeah, no, we can say the year. It was 84.
Okay.
And so I had the opportunity to walk into all sorts of businesses, all sorts of weird businesses. Some were big, like my very, very first client that I worked with was General Mills, like the General Mills, right? In their cereal processing plant, right? It was the manufacturing place that made Cheerios and Twix, you know.
Unique industry.
Yeah. And so what would happen is because I was doing that, I would go in and I would actually have to understand a chunk of that industry to be able to write the program, you know, figure out whatever thing that they were wanting to be able to report on and solve and track and do all of those things. Most of my first 10 to 15 years was doing that. And so I would walk into a lot of businesses and I would actually get in fairly deep, fairly quickly. A few years ago, I was working with a coach and we were kind of talking about this and he said, so how many industries like do you know? And I said, oh, I've been in lots of industries. And he's like, now I'm not talking businesses. And I said, yeah, no, industries. And we kind of, you know, defined what industries were and we were in agreement. And he said, like more than 10. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can do 10 off the top of my head. 10's easy for sure. Says more than 20. I'm like, I don't know, probably. He's like, okay, your homework is to go write out every industry that you can come up with. And that's where I've come up with 47 so far.
So were you writing, I'm going to get a little geeky for a second. Were you writing like for distribution or were you writing like sales and distribution or what kind of software were you writing for these businesses?
For most of them, they were early stage databases long before Oracle and all of those were a thing because they would want data. But if they were big companies like General Mills, they were using these giant systems and to get a new report out was like a 9-month or a 12-month process to request and get it, you know, because it was a whole big thing. But they generally had most of the data that they, you know, they had access to it, but they didn't have electronic access and to be able to do the calculations and do all of those things. So typically that's what I was doing was creating these databases that they could easily enter the data and then do whatever calculations or pull whatever reports they needed quickly out of that data. That's where I started back in the early 80s.
Okay. So you learned a lot about like the working infrastructure of a ton of businesses.
Some very, you know, mainstream, like, you know, General Mills and cereal processing. That's a relatively mainstream, like not everyone understands what's going on with that. But, you know, at a manufacturing business, people get that. But some were very, very unique and completely bizarre. And even today, people are like, that's a thing.
Tell us.
So my all time favorite is largest international supplier of bull semen. It's a big business for breeding cattle for dairies to get good producers. And, you know, I mean, like that, it was a big thing. This was also I was probably late 80s, early 90s. It was way, way, way back when.
Before IVF was a thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so it was, but it wasn't at the same level, right? I mean, like this was the beginning of all, you know, all of that and the whole thing that was going on there. And like I said, this was back in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was $100 million business then.
Really?
Yeah. And it was run out of this little tiny farm town. And it had probably, I don't know, 15 people in the office and another 15 salespeople. Like it was like a 30 person business that was doing that. It was crazy. But what we were tracking was what was selling, what was going. What one of the things I learned from that was what international graft looked like. Because where you have to do a special thing to get into the country, you know, for the prince of that country has to get extra bonuses and things because that's how you actually are allowed to sell your product in that country.
Yeah. You mean greasing the wheels.
Greasing the wheels. Yeah. And we actually wrote the program around to handle all of those things because it was part of doing the business.
Oh, so like an ACT database kind of, right?
Yeah.
That's from back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, I mean it's fascinating the things that you learn and that you have to understand to make the whole thing work. Cause like early they were using some terms like, what is that? And it was like, oh, what it really is this. And it was like, okay, right. It's the greasing of the wheels.
Yeah. So what was your process when you went into a business to like dip in and understand as much as you could on like, and categorize it efficiently?
So I've always been good about asking questions. And so that's one of the things that I still do is I'm really good about asking a question that either is very obvious to everybody else or is not obvious that it needs to be asked at all. So it's kind of both extremes. I don't mind asking a question. It's like, well, so what does that mean? Where everyone else is like, I have no idea what that means, but I don't want to ask.
Right.
And then the other thing that I didn't realize until I went to work for a much larger organization that I've always had is the ability to see how everything strings together very quickly. So I can see point A, point C, point F, point L, and point U. And it's like, oh yeah, no, I see how all those connect.
So you're like a systems thinker.
I am a systems thinker. I've always been a systems thinker. Like I said, I didn't realize that I was doing that. But when I finally went to work with some larger teams, we'd go into an initial meeting and I'd come out and say, well, it seems like it's blah, 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 blah. Then these are the problems, da, da, da. And they're like, how would you know that? Have you been in this industry before? And it's like, no, it's just obvious, isn't it? Because it had always been obvious. And, you know, it's one of those things when it's obvious, always obvious to you, you assume it's obvious to everybody.
Of course, yeah.
But when it happens to be your little special, you know, genius, you don't realize it's that until someone else on the outside can say, no, 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 this seems like this is really easy. This is not easy for most people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's back up a little bit. How did you end up basically getting into computer programming in a time when it was an incredibly male-dominated industry?
I had a lucky accident as my very first programming teacher. I went to school to be a math teacher. I loved math, and I was going to be a math teacher.
There it is.
One of the first classes I had to take was a programming class, and I had never done any programming at all. And it was weird because it was being taught by a philosophy professor, not someone out of the computer science or math department, which I thought was strange, but you know, not for me to question. Right. So I started taking the class and I was doing really well with it. It all made sense. It just, you know, kind of flowed. And as we neared the end of the semester, the professor asked me to come and see him during office hours. And so, you know, so I did. I wasn't worried that it was going to be some, you know, big, horrible thing. And he said, so here's the deal. He said, you have not only gotten perfect scores on all of your tests, homework, everything else, he says, but you've also done every piece of extra credit that could have possibly been done. He said, if I keep you in the curve, everyone else in the class has to get a C or lower. He says, you have literally blown the curve. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. He says, so I'm just dropping you out and pretending like you didn't even exist. And he said, but I also want to suggest that you take this set of classes. You know, it was like four or five classes, I don't remember, for next semester. And he says, I know you came here to be a math major. He said, but if you take all of these classes, it will also work for a computer science major with a math emphasis. Mm. And he said, you can use them either way. So it won't be cutting anything, but you've got more natural talent than I've seen in a long time. And so that opened the door for me. I said, so why is a philosophy professor teaching this class?
Saying that, I was like, how would he know what he's seen?
Right. And I said, so that's an interesting thing to say. And he said, I was one of the original IBM like hackers way back when. He says, I've worked with the best programming minds that exist. I got burned out on it. So I went back to school and got my philosophy degree. But he said, most of my life I spent with some of the best programmers in the world. And he said, you have more natural gifts than I've seen. And so I was like, okay, I'll do programming. So the beginning of the following school year, which was 84, he put me up for a job.
Yeah. I just realized I haven't been using my microphone this whole time. Oh, well. Anyhow, go ahead.
So he put me up for the job where my first client was General Mills. So wow. I started actually working professionally at 19.
As a female at 19.
At a female
in the
at
software
19.
Industry.
Because
was that hard?
Yeah, it's weird sometimes being the only source of estrogen in the room. And this first client at General Mills was not happy to see me because not only was I a girl, but I was young.
You were a girl.
Yeah. I was young. Yeah. And so he was not confident, but I said, why don't we do this? Give me a chance to see if I can solve your problem. If I can't, we'll make sure somebody else takes over this project. But if I can, then we'll go with it. And by the next meeting, he was like, no, you've totally got this nailed. And interestingly enough, it was about a year later, I ran into him on the ski slope up in Tahoe. And we ended up having a great day and skiing the whole day together because we had become good friends over the process because I was able to deliver. But I was lucky I had someone, in that very, very first class who saw the talent and it didn't matter what gender I was.
Yeah, that's
amazing. I'd always been a bit of a tomboy, so that whole thing didn't like really freak me out at all.
I mean, there's always an exception to the rule, right? People say, oh, you know, sexism is rampant, and it is, but at the same time, that doesn't mean everybody is
right.
That. Yeah.
No. Exactly. And so I had a couple. Mm-hmm. I had a couple. You know, interesting doors open, and I had the gumption to walk through them.
We love gumption. Big fan of gumption. So who did you work for when you were doing all this consulting?
So I worked for a firm that hired us as freelancers, as independent, as independent contractors. And I had two or three or four versions of those jobs for a number of years until I went ahead and opened my own firm. And so I did that for a while. Then another mentor said, I think you need to be an employee. And so she brought me in. And then from there, I was actually hired out of her firm to Ernst & Young to work in their department to do similar kind of work. Even though I wasn't always, sometimes I was an employee, but most of the time I was functioning as a consultant, independent contractor,
right.
Whatever. So,
right.
You know, I was an employee of Ernst & Young, but I was functioning as a consultant.
So they didn't treat you like an employee, like you had still had autonomy, right?
Well, no, I mean, I had to follow all the rules and do all the things, but I was going out to different clients to do the work.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I wasn't working inside for Ernst & Young. I was working for Ernst & Young as
more
one
like
of their resources to their clients.
Yeah, cool. Then, so what was the point where you made the switch again to start your own consulting firm?
Well, so from Ernst & Young,
or coaching,
Yeah. So from Ernst & Young, I actually went to running an IT department for a business. And so I, you know, another one of those, for the longest time, I was the only female vice president and I happened to run a technical department. It was a very, you know, so I was newsworthy. It was very, yeah. I had to get PR training because people are like, oh, that's a thing. Because it was also a technical business. And it was like, and you've got a technical, you've got a woman running your IT department. It was like, yeah, I've been doing this for a long time. But that business was a startup, and we were destined to do our initial public offering, our IPO, on Thursday. And Tuesday was when the change happened. And so our IPO completely got trashed. It didn't happen at all, which screwed our funding, which screwed everything in the business. You know, so it was an interesting learning experience, but I had to take a department that I had grown from being myself to having about 150 people in it in about 18 months. So it was a really fast growth period.
Crazy. Yeah.
I had to cut about 2/3 of the department. And then I ended up cutting myself as part of it. I had some severance, which allowed me to get some time to think about what I did. And from there, I became a professional knitting instructor because that makes
sense. Because what?
Because that makes perfect sense.
Actually, you know what? As someone who cannot knit at all because I cannot keep track of stitches and do math, it does make perfect sense.
So I had always been knitting from the time I was in college. I had worked part-time at a yarn shop. I did designing. I did a lot of, you know, knitting on the side. I decided that this was a time to try that. And so I didn't initially start out as a professional instructor. I was building a knitting business, but over a little bit of iteration became that was the piece of the business that I loved. So that was my, I'll call it my first second wind.
Did that happen like organically, or were you just like, oh, I'm going to take more classes, I guess I could teach other people how to do this? Or did people just come to you because they knew you knit?
Yeah, no, it was pretty organically. I was building actually a business to sell patterns and kits and those kind of things. And that happened from me actually going to a bunch of the knitting conventions, you know, for people to go and learn new knitting things.
Knitting conventions.
There's a convention for everything.
Amazing. Oh my gosh.
And I had told my husband when I got laid off, it's like, okay, I've actually almost knit through all my yarn, which anyone who's an actual knitter will know, like, that never happens. And I said, I'm going to go and I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to, you know, learn new techniques. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to meet other people that like me, and I'm going to buy stuff. And he was like, go have a ball. And so within about a few months is when I realized it's like, oh no, I actually want to like do this in a real way. And while I was being a vendor at these events, one of the organizers came up and said, I hear you teach classes, you know, because I will occasionally teach a class here and there. And I said, yeah. And they said, well, why haven't you applied to teach for us? And it's like, because I'm not famous, because no one knows who. It's like, yeah, we don't care about that. We want good teachers. And it was like, okay. So I applied and they let me teach a class or two. Reviews went really well. Did another couple. Reviews went really well. And then that was the beginning. And that's when I realized this is the part that I really love. I didn't love doing the vending. I didn't like making the product and doing all the rest of it. So I got focused on teaching, and I would travel to these conferences. I would travel to yarn shops and teach and all of those kind of things. And while I was doing that was when I discovered that most people in the yarn industry don't actually know very much about business, because most people that start a yarn shop because they love knitting.
I was just thinking, I mean, you went from like super nerd to ultra hippie land.
I did. And then back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then back. Because what I discovered is I would see them and it's like, that is such a bad choice, you know, business-wise to be doing, you know, X, Y, or Z. Lots of different choices on these things. So there is actually an association that was called the National Needle Arts Association, and it was for the people selling to the retailers. And so the retailers would come to buy wholesale, right, from all of these people. So I started teaching their business classes for the retailers so that they would understand, what's going on with your accounting? You know, you need to understand what your P&L is. Talking about, you know, why using electronic newsletter, because this was a long time ago, those are still new.
Electronic newsletter. Oh my gosh.
You know,
Bibliograph.
Why that's useful and how you can use it. And, you know, just on and on and on, all sorts of topics about business. And so I would started doing a little bit of consulting here and there for these various shops. And I realized this is actually what I want to be doing again, full time. So I started that again, probably in, it was 2013, 14, somewhere around there where I actually started doing a fair bit of this. And then I realized that I actually wanted to do it full time and to leave the knitting instruction behind. And I was planning on letting it go. So that would have been my second win. I was planning on letting that go in 2021, but then COVID hit in 2020. So I just let it go a year earlier.
Right.
And went time back to doing the consulting business.
So you went from interpreting and systems thinking and problem solving to teaching people systems thinking and problem solving.
Back to consulting.
Consulting.
Systems thinking and problem solving. Yeah.
I mean, you're focused. That's good.
Yeah.
I love it how you're taking the same skill set and applying it to these very different worlds. So what kind of people do you work with now with your company?
So I work with any woman entrepreneur that is interested in working with me that I feel like I can help and that I actually have a good relationship with. So people will say this and they think I don't believe it, but I won't work with everybody. Occasionally someone will reach out and it's like, yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to be your best fit. And, you know, and often I'll know someone else and it's not because they're a bad person. I just know it's not going to be a great fit for me, the way I work, the things that I do. But I have some businesses that are relatively small, you know, earlier stage businesses, you know, either low six figures or high five figures. So, you know, much earlier stage businesses. And then I also have clients that are well into their seven figures, if not pushing eight figures. And so I've got the full gamut and they cover all sorts of industries back to, because I've worked with so many industries, I can apply, even if it's a new industry to me, I can usually, it's like, oh, this is sort of like XYZ. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, because I'm not so deep in a particular industry, mm-hmm. I can pull things out of other industries and apply it in.
Right, right. Hi, it's Karen. I wanted to remind you guys to go to Second Wind Women. I wanted to ask you your question about, right, work with women who appear successful, but are privately wondering how long they can maintain their current pace. How often do you see that?
A lot. Women entrepreneurs in particular often were what I'm going to call the straight A student. And so we think that there's a right answer. And so we're always working to whatever that we think that right answer is supposed to be, as opposed to the answer that is within ourselves. And most of the time when people come to me, they have some version of that. They may not put those words to it, but they're feeling exhausted. They know they're doing all the right things, but they don't feel like they're making the progress they're supposed to make. You know, like I said, all of the words will change around it. But it's the, why is everything I'm doing look and feel successful and why am I not feeling successful about it? And so part of what I do with my clients is help them get really clear on what does success actually mean to you, not what society is telling you, at this point in your life, not what it was 5 years ago and not what you need it to be in 5 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, given all the things that are actually happening in your life, do you have a spouse? Do you have children? Do you have aging parents? Do you have other obligations? You know, what are all of these pieces? Where is the business actually now? Are you trying to do something that the business itself is not ready to support because it's not at that level yet?
Mm-hmm.
Has the business gone here where you're still thinking here, you know, up and down either direction doesn't matter. So it's about getting that alignment in place. And my role really as a business advisor is to hold space for reflection on that and then hold the accountability to saying, no, we're not going to get distracted by whatever the other things are. And if we're getting stuck, the accountability piece is let's problem solve it.
Right, right. And you have the background to kind of do that. So you're actually offering like a little bit of a interpersonal spin on business systems thinking, right?
Yeah.
Are you working with like founders or director level?
I work with founder CEOs.
Okay.
I will occasionally work with someone that's next level down, but they need to have pretty strong autonomy in whatever their situation is.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm working one-on-one, I'm generally working with CEO founders.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Yeah. No, I know that's such a huge issue. I mean, just because of the things that you're talking about, right? Where women have all these, you know, you have extended family, you have aging parents, you have children. And so often, you know, that falls on women. And then while they're trying to have a full-time career, I think that's a lot of the argument that people make for traditional gender roles is that women could actually have the time to do all those things. But that's a little oversimplified in my view.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of pieces that play into it. And, you know, an example that happened to me about just a little over a year ago, I was talking to someone who was talking about, I want this. And I said, but do you, you know, are you willing to do all the things that you need to do this? And are you actually taking a step toward that? Or are you taking a step toward away from it, thinking that this will eventually get you around about the path? And the example I used is someone who's got, you know, young kids at mm-hmm. home says, I want to reach this level of success so I can have more time with my kids. And
sure.
The problem is if you're working all the time and literally working all the time toward having a level of freedom so that you can spend time with the kids, you may have given up all the time with the kids because by the time you actually get there, yeah. the kids aren't home. And this gal, which I did not, you know, I didn't have the background, she started crying and she said, that's exactly what happened to me. I got so focused on getting the career that would allow me to have all the things for my kids that I wanted. I didn't spend any time with my kids and my kids really don't talk to me anymore. Because she wasn't at the soccer game. When she was at the soccer game, the computer was out. She was answering, you know, like she wasn't present. And so that's also part of what I'll ask those kind of hard questions. You know, in the bio, you said, I'll ask the hard questions and say, is that actually getting you closer to that? Maybe you don't have the $5 million job now.
Right.
But in 6 years, when your youngest is out of high school, you're still going to have plenty of time to get the $5 million job.
Right, right.
But they're not going to go through high school again. Well, hopefully not.
Maybe a year again.
But, you know, they're only going to be under 18 once.
Right, right. Yeah, I feel like that's super common, especially, you know, with people who are high achievers and they want to set a good example for their kids. But I don't think the kids appreciate the example because they don't have enough, you know.
They don't have enough context to understand what the example is, right?
Yeah.
And all they know is mom said she was going to be at the soccer game and she showed up at halftime again.
So what's your general approach in situations like that? Are you encouraging delegations? I mean, delegation. Are you helping them rework the systems that they're using in their business? Or what are you doing to kind of alleviate that?
So in every case, it's unique. My core value is context matters. And so it really does depend on their context, what their business is, where it's at, what it can afford, what actually makes sense given their, you know, sometimes it's about their physical locale. You know, if you're in a big city and you need to have someone help with certain things, finding someone's probably easy. If you're in a little tiny town, maybe it's easier, maybe it's harder. Maybe there's no one who's going to be willing to do it. Maybe you live out far enough away that it's going to, you know, anyone doing this is going to have to charge you an hour drive time to get out to you, then do the thing that, you know, it's like all of it will play in, but it's really about understanding what is the real goal? What are we really trying to achieve? And then making choices. One of my other clients, I kept telling her, it's like, you need a house manager. And she was like, oh, I don't need a house, you know, because that just seemed a little too, I'll say, snooty, you know, and there was a whole bunch of things going on top of it. And I said, I want you to keep thinking about it. because I think that's what you need. And her business, super successful, super successful. And over time, she came up with the perfect person who was able to deal with some of the personal family issues that needed to be dealt with, also had the flexibility to do other things and was had no problem. There was some previous relationship, so there was trust there. The list kind of went on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And now she's like, yeah, I don't even know how I would do this without.
Yeah, I've got a couple of friends who have house managers, and it does kind of sound ridiculous until you look at how much effort it takes to do everything that needs to be done around the house.
Right. Well, and in her case, she had several other businesses and they've taken over some of the more time intensive and less productive things that need to get done.
Right.
You know, he's more than capable of handling all of that. And she, you know, she trusts him with it. And he's actually kind of gotten excited to be able to like manage these businesses for her. There's lots of possibility there, but it's not a one size fits all. I've also had a couple clients where what we decide is they needed to shut their business down.
Oh, tell more about that.
So in one case, she was absolutely sure this was going to be her business forever and ever and ever. And she had developed a print magazine that was a very highly specialized, high-end print magazine. This wasn't, you know, find it at the grocery store checkout stand, you know, kind of magazine. And she loved it, but it was starting to feel like it was weighing her down. And it was getting close to the time that her son was going to be entering grade school. And as she looked at it and looked at the profitability, looked at the time it took versus the money it created, you know, all of the things, she was like, I actually need to shut this down. This is not what I need to be doing right now. And she wasn't sure what she was going to do afterwards, but she very consciously and productively shut the business down. It was not easy and it was emotionally really, you know, really hard for her, but she shut it down, took a couple months to kind of like, you know, process that. And then she had an opportunity that came up that she's working freelance part-time. She said, I'm actually making more money with less responsibility, and I'm able to be fully present for my son as he's transitioning into school.
That's a win. Yeah.
She's in her early 30s. I have zero doubt at some point she will have another business again. But it's okay. It doesn't have to be all the time.
She came to that decision on her own?
Yeah, everyone has to come to their decision. I mean, I got it.
Yeah, I mean, I see so many people who are entrepreneurs just, you know, they've spent their time and their sweat and their sleepless nights on building this thing. I mean, I would imagine like almost anybody would just be hanging on by the fingernails.
Oh, they are. Yeah. And that's where someone like me that can bring an outside perspective can ask other questions that no one else is going to ask.
Right.
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 So, you know, did she come to that decision on her own? Absolutely. Did we have lots of conversations over probably 18 to 24 months that got her there? Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
It's different when you just hear the punchline.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about profitability and how much time it was taking and, oh, these prices are going up and, you know, all the various things that were going on and making her look at the data and what was actually happening and being able to say, you know, you still get to make the choice. That's one of the first things I always say is it is always your business. It is never mine. But I am going to ask you the hard questions.
Yeah.
So that you're making the decision not out of emotional tie, but out of a much more complete picture.
I mean,
the emotional piece counts, though. I'm not saying it doesn't count. It does count.
For sure. For sure. And speaking as, you know, like somewhat of a geek, like it's incredible the data that we have now that can inform your decisions. Whereas, you know, when you first started, people were flying on instinct, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I feel like the business is doing pretty good. I mean, well,
and the thing is, that's not it's not actually instinct, it's emotion. They want it to be doing good.
I know, it's instinct sounds cooler.
It does sound cooler. One of the challenges we have as women is we conflate our emotion and our instinct. Our instinct is right 99.98% of the time. It's a skill you have to start paying attention to say, am I emotionally responding to this? Am I excited about this? Am I scared of this? Am I, you know, is it interesting, is it? Or is it just like, I know this is true?
Gotcha. Gotcha. It's fascinating. It's like you've combined your systems thinking with you're basically doing what you've done for businesses, for people's lives intertwined with their businesses, right?
Right. Well, because our lives are intertwined with our businesses. Yes. One of the biggest issues I see is people try to separate it. And it's like, you can't separate it because, you know, wherever you go, there you are.
Well, and also you run out of time, right?
Yeah.
It's just not even possible.
You have to understand where your limitations are. And, you know, at the prior example, you can't work for 20 years to be able to have access time with your kids, because at that point they're out.
Yeah. Yeah. They're already gone.
It really would have been better to have a fairly menial kind of job so that you could really do all the things that you wanted to do with your kids. And then at the end of that 20 years, go all in on building this massive career. But we get so caught in that we have this limited amount of time. That's like, no, we don't. There's way
and
more.
Plus, we get caught up than we
think we have. And there's way less time than we know that we have. Right.
Well, and plus you get caught up in, like, kind of like you were saying at the beginning, like the A students, and this is the way you do things. And this is the path, and this is the only path. I mean, I have a friend whose father was a janitor, and he got to spend all kinds of amazing time with they had a really strong family, spent tons of time with their kids. Well, he was a janitor at a pharmaceutical company and ended up with stock options, and he makes more money than he would have made if he was an executive all that time.
Right.
So, but, you know,
yeah, it's really understanding what the trade-offs are. And most people won't ask the trade-off half of the question. Right.
Right.
And that's one of the things that I will do. I had another client who said, I just can't get to $1 million. She was, I don't know, $750,000, $800,000 business. Right. Very healthy, successful business. Mm-hmm. And she was very frustrated with that. I just can't get to $1 million. And so my first question was, why do you care? Why does that matter?
Right.
And it was all sorts of outside pressures that had nothing, that she actually didn't have any real interest in at all. Right. And uh-huh. So that was the first thing. And then as we talked about, I said, we can get you there. I said, but you need to understand, by doing so, you're going to have staff. You're going to, there's some things that are going to have to happen because you really have hit that plateau. We can't get to the next level without doing certain things.
Yeah.
And these are the things that you're going to have to do. And oh, by the way, one of the things is the amount that goes into your pocket is probably going to get reduced fairly significantly. And she's like, well, why would I want to do that? And it's like, well, that would be my question as well.
I mean, if you got to make a change, it's going to take some effort and time and money. And yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe for ultimately for a bigger payoff, but yeah.
But this is the thing, at her level where she was, to get, I'll say, back to that kind of same level, she didn't need $1 million business. She'd probably need about $3.5 million business.
Oh, dang. Yeah.
Because that's the thing. The next up isn't just this nice little growth.
I understand.
It's never that. And that's the thing everyone thinks is like, oh, well, if I make a lot of money at $300,000, I'll make more money at $400,000. Well, that might be true. And I'll make more money at $500,000. That might be true. And I'll make more money at $600,000. At some point, it's like, nope, you're actually making way less money. Until we get back to the next place high enough. And
it's like tax strategy, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, you have to know that's what you're actually trying to do. And to get to the $3.5 million business, she would need probably 8 to 12 employees. And I was like, I don't think that's what you, she's like, God, no, I don't want that. I was like, okay, so stay where you're at.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. So how can people work with you now? And who's the person that's best served by working with you?
So the person that I think is best served working with me is, first, they're willing to actually face the realities of it. We've been down all the paths. We've taken all the courses. We've done all the things. We've done all the rah, 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 and it's not actually working. Or, as we talked about earlier, it worked and now I'm miserable, which that's not a win, right? I made a comment a while back to a friend. And I said, if the journey is miserable, there is no goal that's worth it. There's no goal that will overcome that misery. So part of it is saying, let's get you to the place that's appropriate. Right. And And the folks that really are willing to have those conversations and want those conversations, they want that reflection and they want to actually do the things that are going to make a difference for themselves. Mm-hmm. And are not looking for an answer, because that's one of the next things that I say to my clients all the time. I do not have an answer for you. I have lots of answers. Our job is to figure out what is your best answer for you. And some of my answers will be things you don't know. Like I'll give you ideas that have never occurred to you in a zillion years, back to 47 industries, right? Uh-huh. Years ago, someone said to me, you're such an out of the box thinker. And it was like, that did not resonate with me at all. And then I started giggling and she said, what? And I said, I'm not an out of the box thinker. I just know what's in everybody's box.
That's awesome.
And that's what I will do. I'll pull out, something out of somewhere else. But people who are really ready to not look for the right answer, but to figure out what is their best right answer for folks who are ready to make progress and to be held accountable to it, meaning they can't just run off and then say, oh, well, that didn't work. You know, it's like, well, right. Yeah, you obviously, you know, didn't get to Paris because you got stuck in Las Vegas. It got all shiny and you went, woo, let's go.
Right. Here. Yeah. We used to call it, look at the bird.
Yeah.
You're just talking to some of you, look at the bird.
Yeah.
And then
squirrel.
You're just, yeah.
Yep. Shiny object, exactly. all of those things. If you're ready to keep doing the work, I am the person for you. And even if you're earlier in stages, we have products for, early stage businesses, as well as people at various levels. I've had some folks who said, I just need some focus for a few months. They work with us for a few months. That's it. And I have one client who is well into her 9th year of working with me.
That says a lot.
My average client engagement is multiple years. Although we only charge month to month, we have no minimum contracts.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. So is the best way for people to find you to go to everydayeffectiveness.com?
Everydayeffectiveness.com. And there's a place if you want to have a clarity call, we can get on. We get on for 30 minutes and I will chat with you about anything that you want to know about. And we can talk about what it would be like to work together. Also, I have a podcast with my right hand, my own business.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Tanya Kubo. And it's called The Business You Really Want. And you can find that at thebusinessyoureallywant.com. And it's a great way to kind of hear what kind of questions and what my thought process is, because it's not what you typically hear.
I mean, I am
not repeating what you're...
I would love to see what's happening inside your brain.
In social media. So for some people, it's like, well, that can't be right because no one says that. But others are like, no one says that, but that's what I thought was true.
There's the instinct again, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I will link your podcast and your URL for your clarity call in the
show notes, wherever they are.
In the show notes, wherever they are. And thank you so much for coming on, Gwen. I had a great time talking with
Karen,
you.
Oh, Karen, I was so delighted to be able to be on this with you, because I do think the second wind, sometimes the third wind, are amazing parts of the journey. It's a wonderful place to be.
Yeah, with such history that you can really draw from to make like a world that you've crafted.
Absolutely.
Yeah, cool. Thanks so much, Gwen.
Thanks.
Wow, that was so much fun. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. We'll see you next time on Second Wind Women. Let's make your second wind the strongest yet. Thanks.